So what makes Vaitanya so pre-modern is that he engages in an extremely, extremely elaborate deconstruction of human identity. So if you went back into the 1700s and asked someone on the street, what is human identity composed of? They look at you like you're crazy. What does that even mean? I know that I have strong impulses, good impulses, evil impulses. So I know that there's parts of me, but layers of human identity, like they won't understand what you're talking about. Now, when we say those words, they make a lot of sense to us because of a person named Sigmund Freud and a modern psychology. So we're able to layer ourselves into conscience and pre-conscience and subconscious. If you've studied a little bit of psychology, we're able to deconstruct human identity not just by layers, but by different forces. Anyone? Id, ego, superego, so different parts of the human. So for us, and especially in the modern era of brain mapping, so we're able to really layer both latitudinally and longitudinally what human identity is composed of. So we're able to think about, we're not just a person, but we're composed of many different, not just impulses, but parts and components. Now you have in the late 18th century, you have the Balatanya creating much, much more elaborate layers, and we'll try to get to as many layers as we can, layers upon layers upon layers. The terms are not psychological, the terms are Kabbalistic. So the terms are, you can't necessarily prove them by putting people into a clinic and trying to get their impressions. It's more, you have to accept that this is what you're based upon. So it's top down. It's not like when Freud or any modern researcher would study human beings and say, what are you feeling? Where does it come from? What is the Freudian slip? But here it's more like these are the Kabbalistic aspects that control our world. So we'll try to get to as much of this as possible. But his big, big chiddush, this is the most famous, famous chiddush, is that there are two systems, not two forces, not two impulses, not two layers, not two traits, two completely and totally different systems. Okay, now keep in mind, this is in many ways not the way we think. Some of us think in a much more integrated way. But there are two nefashos that a person has. One is, and this just going back to what I read the last time, if you have the sheet from last time, remember last time the issue was, how do we define a tzaddik and a beinoni and a rasha? Conflicting images from different gemaras. This is going to take him 10 parakim, so don't expect an answer today or the next 2 weeks. He has to build a system to first define a tzaddik, a rasha, and a beinoni. So he says, ubi or inyan. This is page 10 from last time's piece of the paper. Try to hold on to them if you can. Alpi quotes of Chaim Vital. Reb Chaim Vital was one of the Ari HaKadosh's Talmidim, so he wrote over a lot of the Ari's Torah. So we have a lot of the Ari's Torah from Reb Chaim Vital. D'lechol ish Yisrael, echad tzadik v'echad rasha, yesh shtei neshamos. Now again, neshamos doesn't mean, as we would think of, a good neshama, but it's two, just imagine two of you. Imagine like you in some movie where you separate yourself into two. There are two totally, each system has layers and sub-layers and parallels, so almost like there are two yous, okay? He quotes a pasuk in Yeshaya, "Uneshamos ani asisi." Uneshamos ani asisi, which will be pashas, means that Kadosh Baruch Hu created all the neshamos. But Chaim Vital quoted the Ari HaKadosh, "Neshamos ani asisi." Each person, I created two neshamos. Okay, what are they? One is what's called the klipa or the sitra achra. Not going to go into too much detail about this. It just means where Kadosh Baruch Hu's essence is covered by shells, is covered by externals. You can't fully see it. That's why it's called the klipa. That creates all your physical elements as well as all your emotional traits. So it's physical as well as all your good traits, bad traits. That everyone has. Now we're starting, I'll take this back later, now we're starting with the big chiddush. Perek Beis is even people that don't know Tanya, even people that aren't Lubavitch, this is the most famous line in all of Hasidus, hands down, maybe tied for first place with Yafutzi Mayin Osecha Chutza. But this is, you can't get any more famous that a Jew, and keep in mind, this is a really, really interesting question. How does Hasidus view non-Jews? But they're not really talking so much directly. Certainly, Bob Shrevi, it's not that it's discriminatory. He's just talking about Jews, two Jews in Lithuania and Russia, white Russia. Nefesh Hashenis. And now let's pick up with the piece that I just noticed added to you. Nefesh Hashenis. Does anyone not have the paper? Where did the papers go? Well, Nefesh Hashenis. The second Nefesh. Where did all the papers go? Nefesh Hashenis be Israel. this second system that a Jew has, in addition to the system that comes from the klipa that's responsible for blood, physical issues, traits, emotions. Here it is. Hu chelek. Shai, you want to read it for us? What's the right way to read it? There's an intonation. Right, you know, you have to pause. Chelek eloka mimal mamish. You have to have a lot of kavanah with the mamish. Right, if you want to... Now, Ilan, let's say you want to change your colors a little. You want to show up and get into the inside farbreng of the Hasidim. So I wouldn't say, hi, my name is Ilan. I come from Yeshiva and Haaretz Yaon. I'm here to study Hasidut. It was like a field study. Hasidut. First of all, I'm here to study a little bit about Hasidut. So, okay, here we go. It's visiting day here at the farbreng. Okay.
So first, you're from Ravon's Yeshiva.
Right, so what you want to say is, first of all, you have to swallow the ches. So train yourself to swallow the ches. I'm here to study some chesidus. Okay, the ches doesn't exist, right? Chesidus, like chesidus. So even like ignore the chesidus, that will get you in. And if that doesn't get you in, you say, I want to learn a little bit more about chelek eloka mimal. Pause, make a fist, and say mamish. Oh, this is it. He knows the secret code. Come on in. I'm saying this not in jest. It's taken very seriously. This is given a status. This is written up in Kabbalah. This is given a status almost of a pseudo Tanakh. You really look at the words. You read them with kavanah. There's a way to read them. There's a lot. I mean, people don't read this like you and I would read a Mesil Sishar. People read this, what the Rebbe mean by this word, what is this intonation, when he said it in Yiddish. And then the second generation, the next Rebbe interpreted this word a little bit differently. Like, this is real, real careful textual reading, because this is really the source of Hasidus. What it basically means is as follows. And to explain as follows, look at me or listen to me. Okay, I'm talking now. So when I'm talking, how am I talking? What's the biology, the physiology of the speech? I'm pressing air through my windpipe or through my sound, my larynx, and it's creating sound. So you're getting a part of me, you're getting my ideas, and my ideas, as expressed by the wind or the air that's going through my voice box or my throat, that whole area. But if I go like this, and I'm not going to do it, you know, this year, I have to be very, very careful. But let's say I go like this, okay? Say, breathe onto you, which the Baruch Hashem I won't do. So I breathed onto you. That's coming from a deeper place. I mean, just breathe for a second to yourself. Feel your diaphragm. Feel people that practice yoga and that perform yoga. That's a lot about breathing and feeling your inside and feeling the energy from inside. So that's a much, much deeper part of it. When I'm speaking, you're basically getting this part. It's my head up. You're getting the air here in my throat. I don't have to breathe deeply. If I want to sing, maybe I have to breathe deeper. I'm not speaking now with my diaphragm. I'm speaking more or less in my throat. But when I were to breathe and exhale, that's my diaphragm. That's a deeper place. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, interestingly enough, man, although the Alter Rebbe takes this as a reference only to Jews, but when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created man, the Torah writes, Vayipach Biapav Nishmas Chaim. Hashem breathed. He didn't speak. The rest of creation, Hashem spoke. Yehi Or, Yehi Choshech. When Hashem created man, Vayipach Biapav Nishmas Chaim. So now let's read. Okay. Boshikasa Bazar, line number 3. Man Dinafach Mitochei Nafach. He quotes the Zohar that when you breathe, when you exhale, Mitochei Nafach. Perish. Here are the words of the Rebbe. Mitochei Yuso. When you exhale, you're bringing your real guts. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu exhaled, he was giving, you know the word in Yiddish? Shaya? You ever heard the word getlecha, a part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now this is very, very careful, because getlecha in Yiddish means a part of the Ribono Shel Olam. It doesn't mean a part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but a part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's trickle down, we'll talk about this a little bit later, essence. Does it mean that Hashem is in you? That's pantheistic, but a part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's essence. So in our world, Hashem created us in His image. In His image means He gave us intelligence, consciousness, free choice, dreams, whatever, free speech. But in Kabbalah, Hashem didn't just create us in His image, but Hashem created a part of Himself in us, a part of His, I'm using a word that in our world has negative association, not negative, but not necessarily laudatory, but in just using his English translation, a secretion, hafrasha. So something, when something comes from your body, it's not your body, but it's, and in Kabbalah, things secrete, things, what's a better word? Emit, or emerge from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's essence. Okay. Now, why is this so important? We'll see a little bit more today, but why is this so important? Even if you're not going to get into the nitty-gritty details of Kabbalah and to the nitty-gritty details of Tanya, this is a major, major, major revolution of Hasidus. And it's not only the Babich Rebbe, but this is the most famous line. What I mean is as follows. One of the major revolutions of Hasidus is carving out legitimate place for a fallen Jew. Before Hasidus, there was only one space for a fallen Jew. There are two places. Either he's going to do tshuva, and therefore we're makabel him, you give him tochacha, you're a navi, the navim are full of tochacha, so you're being mochiach him to improve. Or you're out, and when you fall, and you're out. There's no, it's binary. Either you're in, or you're out. Now again, binary doesn't mean you have to be perfect, but either there's something that mandates or warrants you being included, or you're excluded. Of course, we'll never really exclude you. You know why? Because we think there's still a chance. Ad yom osa techakala. So we're going to wait until the tshuva, so we're not really going to exclude you, but only because you're a candidate for tshuva. Because you're based on performance. And if your performance is terrible, then you don't have a place. And obviously, we're still waiting because you can always improve till the day you die. In Hasidus, it's an entirely different system. Every Jew has an inherent, again, I'm using words now loosely, but you know what I mean, inherent part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu within them, chelek eloka mimal, which means that no matter how aberrant the behavior, no matter how terrible, no matter how abhorrent, yeah, it's only extrinsic. It's not definitional. It doesn't define you. The Mishalim given in the Hasidus are, it's like a jewel that falls into sand. Can you really take away the luster of the jewel? Not really. Sand is covering, you brush it off a little thither. Inherently, the jewel still has resplendence. It's just covered by some schmutz, by some dirt. That's a major, major shift in Hasidus. That cosmologically, you may look like you're performing the worst deeds, you still have a chelik, like you're like me. And that is called, by people that don't really define it clearer, that's called Avas Yisrael. When Hasidim talk about Avas Yisrael, this is what they mean. Now, what's so hard for you to realize and appreciate is that Hasidus today is really, really different than it was 200 years ago. When I say Hasidus, in many of your cases, the last thing you think about is Avas Yisrael. What do you mean? They're very insular, they're very exclusionary, you can't join unless you follow. They're not. So the truth is, it's not really so in the world of thought, but it is to a degree so, not really being a Hasid. It seems to be that way in the world of practice. And part of it is because Hasidus underwent real, real trauma since its inception in the late 18th century. It was really ground zero facing off against Reform, the conservative. It was really ground zero facing off against Zionism, ultimately, which it saw as very secular. Then ultimately, it was ground zero against the Nazis. The Nazi, Hitler, Yimach Shemo, tore through Hasidus. Hasidim suffered disproportionately. There were entire Hasiduses which were eliminated. Okay, we talk about our families and this person in the community survived. Remember, Hasidim lived in the most vulnerable, unprotected parts of Europe. The Ashkenazim lived, ironically, in Germany, but ironically, in some cases, they had greater protection in Western Europe, England, France, they were able to escape. In deep, deep Eastern Europe, Russia, they were able to retreat behind the armies. The Hasidim were basically sitting ducks, living in Hungary, Romania, Poland, Czechoslovakia. It's just like a steamroller. So what happened to Hasidus is three waves of attacks created insularity. There's this boogeyman out there, and we have to return to our own small space and defend ourselves against who's this boogeyman? The outsider. Who's the outsider? And again, Zionist, Hitler, secular Jew. They're all out to get us type of sense. So Hasidus really became very, very insular. Let's just protect what we can. Let's dress the way we did in Europe. Let's cut ourselves off from the outside world. Let's speak Yiddish. I don't think this was ever written as, oh, this is going to be our plan. It's more of a sociological development. But what you're seeing today in Hasidus is not the original Hasidus. The last glimmer of the original open, embracing Hasidus is Chabad. When you see Chabad basically saying, every Jew come in, I don't care. I'm not checking anyone's sisters at the door. Come, be a Jew, don't be a Jew. You're married to a Jew, your father's a Jew, your mother's a Jew, your pet chicken's a Jew. You know, you're Jewish, you're in. You know, this embrace, everyone come. So it gets very cheap and everything. All they want to do is serve food for backpackers in India. All they want to do is serve vacation food. And that's not their It's based on the original sense of Hasidus that every Jew has that chelek alok hamimal. You're learning ki mitzvah, so that person has nothing to do with Yiddishkeit. It doesn't make a difference. Deep down, you have the part of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. It's inalienable. It's irremovable. This is where it comes from. This is at the heart of all Hasidus. Hasidus has lost that operational voice. If you'd walk into the Belzer Beis Medrash, or if you'd walk into even a Satmar Beis Medrash, you're learning this, but it doesn't express itself, okay? For example, okay, you should never need to know this. You should never need this. But if you're ever ill in New York City, and you have to be hospitalized for an extended period of time, has anyone ever been in New York hospital systems? Or across the Eastern Seaboard? Who takes care of you soup to nuts, A to Z? Satmar. And when I say they'll take care of you, they will give you an apartment in the Upper West Side, it's near the hotel. This pricey apartment to live in for as long as you need, like 2 years. And they'll bring every single meal to you. So people think, oh, the Satmar Rebbe hated Satmar Rebbe was a paragon of Avas Yisrael. He loved Jews so much that he was trying to protect you from apocalyptic nightmare. How is he trying to protect you from apocalyptic nightmare? By telling you the Zionists were causing the apocalyptic nightmare. So we just disagree with the ideology. But his mind, I hate Zionists. He was a lover of Jews, and he said, my goodness, the end is coming, and if you're not careful, then you're just going to fall into that trap. And that expressed itself in the Avas Yisrael. So you still see some glimmers of it. It comes from this. Let me just read one or two. I really wanted to read more, but I don't want to take that much time. And the proofs he has are as follows. Neshamos Yisrael, quoted in Zohar. Alu, line number 6, Alu b'machshava. We'll get back to this a little bit later, but Alu means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created this extra neshama, and it came from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's machshava, which we'll see in a few moments. And to help us understand this, he uses a pasuk in Parsha Shmos, Bini Bechori Yisrael, or the pasuk in Re'eh, Banim Atem Lashem Elokechem. A son literally stems physically from a father. A father's sperm creates a child, and it creates every part of that child. And there's still that connection between child and father. Same way we are created by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and again, not in the physical way, but this, I mean, to put it as bluntly as I can, the same way there's a part of the father that separates from the father and creates the physical son, there's a part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that separates and trickles its way down four worlds. So it's not a direct separation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that creates neshama, the second neshama, the Schelek Eloka Mimal. Okay? Now let's read. Kach kivayachal, second to last wide line. Nishmas kol ish Yisrael. Nimshecha mimachshavto v'chachmaso yisbarach. My nefesh, my second nefesh, is a direct emanation, secretion, development from Hashem's chachma. Now here he has to qualify what Hashem's chachma is. Here is a very famous statement of the Tanya that even if you're not fully understanding the Tanya, people take this out. What makes the Tanya so powerful, and why even non-Hasidim read it, it's probably the only sefer that's broad. If you walked into Lakewood, or you walked into Mir, any yeshiva bachar, I imagine, and maybe I'm not updated, but certainly in my day, everyone's learning the Tanya, even though they're not interested in Hasidus, because it's very intellectual, and they're intellectual ideas that are standalone islands that are important, even if you don't put them in the context of the overall flow of the Tanya. This is one of them. De'ihu HaKadosh Baruch Hu Chachim is a Chacham. Ve'lo b'chachma yediya elehu v'chachmaso echad. This is an important line. Hashem's intellect is not something that we can understand. Why is it not something we can understand? Because it is indivisible. Okay, you have Yosef, you have yourself, your identity, whatever your identity is, then you have your intellect, and you exercise your intellect to understand something. Let's say for argument's sake, we could lobotomize you and take out all your intellect, okay? You'd lose a lot of your personality, but you'd still have your identity. You'd lose your memory, you'd lose your math possibilities, you'd lose your speech, but you won't lose yourself. So you are separate from your intellect. Your intellect doesn't define you. Your intellect is a tool that Hashem gave you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he and his intellect are indivisible. That's the line. That's why it's such an important line. Elohu v'chachmaso echad u'kimo shekasef haRambam. He's quoting the Rambam in Hilchos Yisod De'Atara, Perek Beis, Shehu hamada v'hu hayodea. He is the essence as well as the knower. So for me, I myself, and then I know something. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is indivisible. V'davar zeh ein b'yecholas adam lavin al barya. We can't explain this because we don't know. We don't have this in our phenomenon. Now, for us, this means, and we'll talk about this because I've had a lot of conversations with some boys, that when I'm studying this, see this? I am getting as close to understanding that Kodesh Baruch Hu as I can. If I study Ari Wise, and I study your intellect, your intellectual activity, your knowledge base, I'm really getting to know you. I'm getting to know your bank of knowledge. I'm getting to know what you study. Again, I can then extrapolate. Oh, you studied physics, you must be this type of person. You studied math, you must be this type of person. But when I'm studying Hashem's intellect, that is indivisible from Hashem's essence, because Hashem doesn't have parts to it. So when I'm studying every word of Arev and every Kanani, that's by definition the closest I could come to. So you see why this is important for non-Hasidim? Why, if I'm studying Gemara, why is that the closest I can come to Hashem? Should I be studying history, morality, Tanakh, philosophy, which all are helpful, but if I'm trying to understand it, only through Hashem's intellect that I can fully understand it. That's why this is such a narrow Kabbalah. That means that if I come from Hashem's intellect, then I come from Hashem. Through all of it's called Hishtalshut, all of its trickle down. Okay, so we'll stop here, but this is the most, I can't imagine, it's another piece of the Tanya. This is the most popular part of the Tanya. So we'll try to develop a little bit further. We'll talk about the connection to Tzadikim. But Chelek Eloka Mimal, two separate systems. We'll try to build these two systems. It's just like we're building a system of Kesef Kiddushin. We'll try to build these systems. And I'll try to highlight what ideas can be expanded or exported even for another season. Yes, Eric.
The idea of like an animal, like how does that show up?
You what?
Aristotle,
yeah, but he just developed two different impulses, forces. For the Babshi Rebbe, there are two totally different, like two yeshivas. And each yeshiva has a kitchen, each yeshiva has rebbe. I mean, you'll see the Nefesh HaLokus has this layer and this layer subdivides into 13 different components, and this is subdivided into primary one and secondary one. So he's created because he's using the cosmological system as a map for human identity. So he's not just saying, oh, you have this drawer, that drawer. I think, I'm not an expert in Aristotelian deconstruction of self, but I think it's just you've got forces that conflict within you. Rather than, these are not forces, these are like two years, two different identities. Yes, no problem.
How true is the Hasidic stuff that Jew, you know, no matter if he's sinning, still has that knowledge? I mean, the myth wants that people want
to. I'm sorry?
Like, you know, Rabbi Hanani met Kasha Omer, like, we say pretty much every day.
Ratzach Rishbach was Zachas as
well. No, Rabbi Hanani, sorry, the other one. Whatever, Rabbi wants that people want to be sure. Let me tell you something about Kalabalam.
Right, that just means that. Right, right. So that could mean for a non-chassid that you're really flawed, and I mean you, but a balchet is really flawed, and he's really decayed, and he's really, really internally reconstructed in a negative and evil way, but he has chosavos, or but he has his mitzvos, or but he has bris milah. So everyone's going to go, and there's an element in the tzaddik. Chassidus goes one step further. No, it's all just extrinsic. It's all just going to fade away. It's a very, very different statement.
The amich kulam tzaddikim doesn't seem like you can lob out and say, yeah, tzaddik, but you have
chosavos. Okay, so you're basically saying you're a natural born chassid. You don't need chassidus.
Okay,
my impression is, be careful what I said. My impression is that there's still a difference. And all that I'm reading in Hasidus, again, I don't know how everyone interprets Ramech Kulam Tzadikim, but I think that most people feel that Chayt is definitive. It defines you. It doesn't completely capture you. There are different sides to you. Whereas in Hasidus, it's not definitional. It's just external. It's extrinsic. So that's where I think that difference comes. And again, in the world of thought, in the world of practice, there are real ramifications. The first two, three, four, five generations of Hasidus are very, very, very embracing. In ways that, quite frankly, that was the reaction of Hasidus. They thought that the Jewish world had become too isolationist and exclusionary and tiered. And if you were in the Beis Medrash, you were in. If you're out of the Beis Medrash, you were out. And Hasidus said, let's just accept everyone. The irony today is that Hasidus is very insensitive, so people don't really capture that. Okay. Let's talk about Eved Kanani. Okay. Eved Kanani, what did we see so far? Who remembers, what's our first definition of Eved Kanani? Right. You don't need to deliver money from the Baal to the wife. Okay, we said it, Avi Bolson, in a harsh way. Avi Bolson tried to soften it a little bit. But all you need is that the wife should be mekabel money, just like all you need is that the Adam should be mekabel money. What's the language of Rava on Daf Chaf Gimel? Kabbalas Rava Garmalai. So if you exported Rava to Daf Zayin, what would you say on Daf Zayin? Kabbalas Isha Garmalai. All you need is a woman to receive money on behalf of the husband. We talked about the Machne Ephraim. We talked about the Ktzos. We talked about the Avnei Miluim. We talked about Tosvos. We talked about the ramifications of this from Isaac Hidushin. Where's the Isaac Kicha if the husband doesn't deliver any money? Now, what's the problem with this? The answer is not very much. This is a pretty, pretty decent shot in the sugya. The problem are, can you really make it work for Kiddushin? That's one problem. The other problem is as follows, and here we're at a big ravine, a big split in the sugya. According to the pshat we talked about last time, let me record this.